Had your kids. Had your wife. And had your husband because they raping everybody out here.
Coming straight at you from the heart of the California Redwoods, it's Shed Time.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Winning. My jokes are bad.
Welcome to the shed. I'm Andrew Newman, sitting in the shed again with Steve Turbovich. Steve, how you been?
Good. How you doing, man?
Doing all right. Camacho?
Doing awesome, as always. Not skipping a beat.
Of course, Brian Camacho back in the shed. I don't know. How do you feel like the first episode went after a two-year hiatus?
I think it went great. I feel like we didn't lose any of the chemistry. We're kind of leapfrogging each other pretty well, meshed pretty well. What do you think, Steve?
Oh yeah, I mean, like we didn't, like we had never stopped at all.
As if like we just
we just recorded the week before that.
Yeah, exactly.
Just didn't miss a beat.
Yes.
Nope. Yeah, the latest video game that came out last week was Battlefield 1, which wasn't supposed to be due out until Friday. But I went there Wednesday to confirm the release. They're doing a 9 o'clock release for Thursday, right? Mm-hmm. And they said, but for $20 more right now, you could take it home. And I was kind of like, well, do I want to spend the $20 to take the disc home? I mean, if I download it, but then what's to stop EA from saying, oh, you're not going to have access to it until the actual release date itself? Wow. So I skipped, whatever. I waived my, my privilege to take it home a day early. So I went there.
For 20 extra bucks?
Yeah. And I was like,
so you
I'm
paid
not,
60 for it?
No, I only paid 60 for it.
Right.
Okay. So I was like, no, I'll skip it. I'll wait, So I went there Thursday at 7:15 to, do my finalized, which it's already paid for, but you had to get a finalized receipt. I walk in there, they stamp me, they look me up, give my ID, and bam, I get to take it home at 7:15 on Thursday night.
Okay.
There had been some server issues, which is funny because I downloaded it, and I went to check out the multiplayer, and EA, there was a little thing, says, oh, sorry, you can't access multiplayer because you're not connected to the internet. Which I call shenanigans on that. EA was definitely having server first launch day issues.
I've always wondered about that. Why are there so many online games? Even games that are meant to only be played online. Why is it that sometimes when they get released, they do betas and all this other shit. Why is it that so often these games come out, whether it be Grand Theft Auto or Battlefield or whatever, they come out and they're like not ready. It's like, oh, this is some kind of big, like they didn't see this coming or something.
It's like that. I've noticed that since Grand Theft Auto 5, when the Grand Theft Auto Online, it went from multiplayer to online. No one was really able to access it until almost like 2 weeks after launch.
And when they did, it wasn't very good.
No, it was like they had to do like 5 updates to it, and it is what it is. But
Battlefront was kind of like that. Battlefront came out and it seemed like it wasn't smooth, or I don't know, there was something going on with it. And
surprise, surprise, an EA.
Yeah, it improved a lot.
Improved.
But yeah, you'd think a company like EA would already have the infrastructure to like support these.
For some reason, the beta, I think it's the beta is a different port to the actual game itself when you're playing the real online portion of it. So when you have the game, I think that it's the fact that the company servers couldn't handle or wasn't anticipating that many people trying to flood into the server at once, which you think, given the amount of reservations that was already taken, plus a certain percentage in your margin for sales, you would have been able to be prepared for that big influx of the amount of people coming users, into the server. Okay. Players. Yes. So, but it doesn't surprise me at all that every launch date, you know, when it comes to a major multiplayer game, to have launch day issues. And again, EA had this big sign on my, you know, I try to access the multiplayer. You're not connected to the internet. That was bullshit. I was connected to the internet because I wouldn't have been able to access my friends list. I wouldn't have been able to access Pandora. I wouldn't have been able to access whatever I needed to access without being online. So it was obvious they were having issues, but they weren't saying they were. It was, they redirected the, you know, the notice to me as if it was my fault that I wasn't connected, which was total, you know, bullcrap. However, I was finally able to access it. It took a good 3 days for the servers to finally seem like they were open. The campaign is really well done. It takes place all over Europe during World War I, North Africa, different parts. You know, you have 5-6 different characters, major character protagonists. And each character has their own story, and you're playing 5 or 6 different levels of their. So it's a pretty big campaign. It's pretty big, and you know, there's a lot to do. One story, you're playing a soldier who's a tank operator. So you get to, another is an aviator. Another is, you're somewhere in North Africa, along doing the in the deserts, and you know, stopping the Axis from trying to advance their lines through. And it has a pretty rich storyline, the graphics, and it's really well done. The good score behind it makes you feel like you're in this, you know, dramatic war movie. So it's all together. I mean, it definitely met up to its expectations. However, you know, the multiplayer, again, it shouldn't be a surprise that they're always having launch day issues. And but it's fun. It's a massive multiplayer issue. You're talking about like 65, 62 players battling it out online, and it's, you know, pretty massive. It does make you feel like you're in the middle of this chaotic war. You know, when you're the spawning, you're not just spawning and get killed right away. It's cool. You know, you still have a chance to.
Yeah, I played some of the beta.
You know.
And it was like the map they had on the beta was huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like you were in Turkey.
Yeah.
Like in the desert in Turkey.
It's cool.
So there's like big cliffs everywhere. Mm-hmm. And there's also like a big sand, literally like a sandbox.
Yeah, you're in the, and there's some maps that are so huge that you know, it's encouraged that, you know, you utilize the vehicles that are there at your spawn point if you can, because if you're out there by yourself and you have an opposition sniper in position, you're sitting duck. That's, you know, I mean, it's manageable, but they encourage a lot of vehicle use, and that also on another level encourages teamwork and team play. So altogether, I mean, it's different. It's a different Battlefield game from what we're used to in the last 5 years that we've been getting, which have been, you know, up to date warfare. This again brings us back to World War One. So you're utilizing those weapons, or using those types of weapons that were, you know, available at that date of time. It's cool. You know, I'd say big thumbs up for those who want, you know, a massive multiplayer that you know, has a lot of action. You know, you're still debating if you want Battlefield. I would definitely recommend Battlefield One.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's recommendable?
Yes, highly recommendable. Highly. My famous quote, highly recommendable.
That's right.
Yes. That's right. I'm this coming week, I'm so looking forward to the release of Titanfall 2.
Oh, wow.
Because okay. Titanfall 2, they're incorporating an actual real campaign to it, okay. Opposed to Titanfall 1.
Which was a much online map.
It was an online campaign. Yeah. There was a story behind it.
Yeah. But didn't it feel like unique to you, which was kind of interesting. It was an interesting approach.
No, it was, definitely, because you had, you know, it felt like a first-person shooter.
Yeah.
But then when you called in your Titan, which is that big mech, You know, you're when you're in the Titan, it's an expansion to the Soldier. So it feels like it's so smooth. I don't know
how. Your vantage point. I played it a little bit.
It's really great because, you know, you have a full screen. It makes you feel like you're inside this Titan, but it's not, you know, clunky and it's not difficult to operate. It's like you're one with the machine and you forget that you're even in this machine because that's how, you know, that's how smooth it is. And again, they're gonna have a true campaign to the game and also bring back the multiplayer, but add a few more things to multiplayer that other, you know, the fans were kind of requesting. I wasn't at first truly hyped for it, but the closer the release date comes, I'm getting excited for it. They're gonna release it.
Would you say that you're getting geared up? You're geared up to get hyped.
I am. I'm getting geared up to get hyped for it. Yes, definitely. Yes.
I'm just making sure.
And again, a lot of these games that I'm reviewing, you know, this is the time of year where, you know, I get excited because this is like my Christmas. I look forward to the end of September all the way into the end of November, December, because that's when all the holiday new releases come out. These are the games that they were showcasing, you know, during the summer's E3. And for those that haven't picked up the games yet, at least you kind of have an idea of what you may want to, you know, put on your Christmas list for Santa to bring. Yeah, for your own Christmas, or, you know.
Okay, Titanfall 2 is on the list.
Titanfall 2 is on the list.
And definitely. And Battlefield 1.
Battlefield 1, yeah. And, you know, I'm not a huge Battlefield fan. Like, I have it in my collection because I enjoy the campaign. And the multiplayer, if you want to, you know, group up with, you know, some people online and just do some massive destruction, that's what it's there for. But, it's a good time. It's a good time. It's something definitely consider to add to your library of video games.
Okay. If, you know, you're, both of those. Both. Well, you haven't even played.
I haven't played Titanfall yet, but I am excited. Again, it's coming out between Thursday night, Friday, depending on what day. Okay. I feel like getting it. I'm looking forward to. So next week's show, definitely look forward to my review for it.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Wow. Okay.
Yep.
I got the Xbox One rendition of Arkham Asylum.
Oh, you did?
And Arkham City.
Oh, cool.
Came in a bundle.
Yeah.
Now, you played the other, the yeah. Kibble on the Return 360.
Return to Arkham.
Now, have you played those versions on the 360?
Yeah, I have them.
And
I own them.
On the 360. Yeah. And then you just downloaded the
new release. Yeah, because the graphics are all upgraded.
I was going to add, smooth. So what's...
It's super smooth.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah. Wow. That was awesome to see those classics.
Kind of
revitalized in a way.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a good game.
Okay.
I would say it's highly recommendable.
Okay.
For sure.
Damn. Okay.
What was it, like $30 for the two or something like that?
Oh, no, it was 50, dude.
50, okay. Well, that's not bad. I mean, if you look at it, it's 25, two games.
I was hoping I was hoping they were selling them separately, but they weren't.
It's a thing.
So it's like buying Return to Arkham. They must have a disc for it. They must have a disc in the stores, right?
Yeah, they do. They're on the shelves.
The disc that says Return to Arkham.
If they were selling it separate and you had a choice... that means you wouldn't have bought the two games.
I would have bought Arkham Asylum, played through it a bunch, and then I would have got Arkham City.
Gotcha. Oh. Okay, so you would have still bought the two regardless. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm like that.
Okay. Hey, there's nothing wrong with it.
So you're like, if I get away spending a little less.
Yeah, that's sure.
Then, you know, I guess in the long run, sometimes you'll save like $5 or something.
But that's a part of being a gamer.
Yeah, whatever. It's
cool.
What have you been playing recently? Anything?
Me?
Yeah.
What have I? Nothing. I haven't been playing anything.
Okay.
Last thing I had in mind. Now, mind you, I've got a 360. I don't have a one yet. So I was playing Skyrim a few weeks ago. I got bored with GTA 5 a while ago. God, I found this cache of games. You remember that?
Yeah.
I was so fucking happy about it at the beginning.
Tell our audience.
Yeah. So we live in a college town, and it was at the end of the spring semester when everyone moves out, and it's always a treasure trove in any, like, dumpster that you find in an apartment.
Or a street corner for some
potential treasure trove.
Yeah, totally. Because they'll leave...
we ain't got room in the car or whatever.
Exactly, exactly.
Mad girlfriend in this case.
Right, right. Yeah, it could have been. Yeah, that's what we're figuring. So, walking home from work and just happened to look over my shoulder, right on top of this full dumpster were six 360 games. Actually, a bunch, but some were fucked up. But six or seven were completely intact and playable. GTA 5.
Wow.
One of the Battlefields.
Okay.
First Black Ops.
Wow.
Gears 3.
Wow. Okay.
Left 4 Dead 2.
Okay.
And two Assassin's Creeds. I can't remember. Revelation?
And maybe Brotherhood or something like that?
Yeah, maybe Brotherhood. Yeah, okay. I can't remember the other one. Yeah. Sure.
Or no, it was the Assassin's Creed 2 and Revelations.
Maybe.
It's the one that takes place in Italy where you play as
Ezio. Oh, yeah, I remember. I put most of them in for at least a couple minutes of gameplay just to get a feel for them.
Yeah. And plus get a couple achievement points out of it.
Yeah, right. I guess so. That racked up my... Oh, boy. But the only one I really wanted to play before I even found them was GTA. The only one. The rest of them were like, yeah, okay, cool, I'll try them. And I haven't. And I still haven't. I don't know. Okay. I don't know that I'll ever be like a fool. I bought that 360 just so I can play Arkham Asylum when it first came out.
Okay.
I was such a comic book fan and Batman fan that I wanted to play that game. But if they had never made Arkham Asylum,
you don't think
doubt I would have ever bought a video game console.
Yeah, wow. Skyrim, though.
I do, actually, yeah. So it's a good thing.
It's almost a blessing in disguise for that.
Never.
Yeah. No. I love Skyrim, and
do you think, because I know that you've played and you're still playing the hell out of Skyrim, would you be able to appreciate a game like Fallout that's made by the same...
Right. I tried Fallout 3, but Fallout 3's graphics are on par with Oblivion.
Okay.
And Oblivion's graphics to me were so bad after having acquired a taste for Skyrim that I couldn't play more than a couple quests of Oblivion. So sure. I could never get into it because it really just looked blocky and it just wasn't aesthetically pleasing.
And you're talking about Fallout 3?
I'm talking about Oblivion. And I'm talking about Fallout 3.
Okay, gotcha.
Now, I heard that New Vegas came out after Fallout 3.
It did.
And therefore might have graphics that look a little more like Skyrim.
I would say New Vegas is on par with Fallout 3.
With Fallout 3. Then I don't know.
I never think of Fallout 3 as having bad graphics, so that's funny.
I know.
Skyrim,
yeah.
So like, huh?
But you have an eye for it. You know what's up.
Yeah, it's because I got used to Skyrim. Had I played them before Skyrim,
sure,
no problem. I would have, because the lore of Fallout, I fucking love the whole. You know.
Yeah.
We just went crazy with nukes and like the transistor was never invented, so computers are in their infancy, but nuclear tech is through the roof. It's fucking, it's brilliant. And the whole 50s thing.
Obviously, yeah, yeah. Whatever. It's kind of cool to have that retro sci-fi.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
50s.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. Futuristic 50s. Like, yeah. 50s on steroids.
Their
like
version of what
the 50s never ended. But the 50s just continued for a couple hundred years.
And at the same time, they're kind of like ultra-violent. And whoa.
Totally.
Definitely. I enjoy Fallout a lot.
I think I would really like Fallout 4. If I had one, I think I would get into that.
Right? You would definitely. It's good. The from the beginning when they, because the story, everything revolves around you. It's kind of like, think about this, like you as the player, or like you're like the sun in the solar system, and the solar system is the game, and everything revolves around you. It's you, you know, and it's catered.
Well, how
to
is
you.
That different from any other? I don't understand. What do you mean?
It's
like you're the Dovahkiin.
You know what? It's the actual, because each story is different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's somewhat loosely based on, you know, the same level to some extent, but this storyline is totally different because it really tries to, you know, kind of pin your emotion to the plot. And it really, you know, it sucks you really quick because your character is affected by what happened. It personally affected, not just, you know, it's not like everybody in, you know,
sure, yeah.
If the video game was real or alive, it's not like everyone's lives weren't affected, but because you're an individual that has an individual story and the story is definitely could be different on how everyone else's story was affected, you know, whether they lost a family member or they got separated by a family member or you violently lost someone.
Like how everyone's got a story about what happened to them when everyone turned in The Walking Dead.
Exactly.
When shit went down. Everyone's exactly. got a story.
Everyone's story is different, right, you know, and unique. And that's what they do in Fallout 4. Your story is... It makes it feel like you're the only... That's the only thing that happened... Or what happened to you never happened to anybody else.
Yeah,
it's
right.
unique
okay,
in its own
okay,
way. And that's what brings you into it. And and you're curious. Sure. And that's when the curiosity keeps feeding into playing more, you just get deeper and deeper into the rabbit hole, and it's fun. You know, and that's what makes this Fallout a lot. This makes it, to me, stands out more than the last two installments.
Yeah. And it's, it definitely has the feel. Well, Fallout 3 had this too, like the exploratory feel, exploring.
Uh-huh.
That you're actually like, because you like venture out in the world, you come out of a vault.
Yes.
And so Fallout 3 is like that also, and. That whole idea that you're going out into this world that's unexplored or that you haven't experienced yet.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you're sharing that.
Right, right.
Sense of exploration.
Totally. Yep. Which is what I love about Skyrim. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's like a functional world that they've created.
Yeah.
Where there's, you know, different villages and different
tribes. And it's massive, you know?
Yep.
I mean, that's what, you know, if Skyrim was half its size, I wouldn't be as... Any smaller than it is, I wouldn't be as impressed.
Did you download Dawnguard?
Oh, yeah. I got Dawnguard. I got all of it.
I got
Solstheim. I got fucking...
That's cool. Fire. Okay.
Hearthfire.
Okay, Hearthfire, yeah.
Yeah,
Hearthfire. Okay.
I played the shit out of it.
You know, did I tell you what happened to me in Skyrim?
Huh.
Okay, so I downloaded all the extra DLC before I finished the game because I was so
this
excited.
This sounds familiar, but go ahead. Yeah.
So anyway, I was at the end of the game, basically, of the actual, like, before I tapped into... Because I was really looking forward to Dawnguard.
Yeah, I bet.
And the character that I picked was a Khajiit, which is that cat-looking person. Mm-hmm. And it's cool because when, like, at night, you're in caves, you have that... That night vision.
Oh, really?
It's really cool. That is totally cool. And also I did a lot of missions. I completed all the missions for I think it was called the Brotherhood or something, or the Companions.
Which
I got to be part of the werewolfism.
It's cool. So you're like, a cat that turns into a werewolf.
Yeah, and it was cool, man. I was kicking ass. Cool. And now basically I and all my attributes was fed into, or skill points were fed into, like, the thievery level.
Okay.
Lockpicking, pickpocketing, and things like that. And I was and the Brotherhood of Assassins, I believe it was called, right? I did a lot of extra things for
them. Right.
Yeah. So I got, you know, I got some extra cool gear, and I was looking like a cool ass badass guy, right? So anyway, I was at the very end. I went back to Whiterun.
Yeah.
And, you know, where you have to release the dragon. You found out that they actually had a dragon kept somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And you have to release them. And then once you release them, he flies you out to this island to basically beat, like, the head boss.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And, you know, before anything, like, are you sure you want to leave? Because on the unplayed, you can come back to it later. But, you know, this is once you know, there's no return till after. That's what most games do, most RPGs.
Yeah, sure.
Okay,
it's
so
an
anyway,
open world afterwards, but the campaign is
but
still.
Yeah, 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 close, exactly. Yeah. So I get to the part where I'm supposed to release the dragon so I can get on the dragon to fly me to the head boss so I can complete the game.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, I bet you I was like less than 15 minutes away from completing the game.
Uh-huh.
And I put umps and umps and umps of hours into it, dude. Uh-huh. Days, dude. Weeks.
Yeah.
And sure enough, the whole point is to release the dragon. So you had to—he was in shackles, and you just had to release four wheels to, you know, release his harness,
okay,
and get on him and fly away.
Yeah.
The minute I released him, the NPCs started tripping out. This was a glitch in the game.
Okay.
Started tripping out. They're like, "Oh my god, the dragon's released!" And they all started attacking the dragon.
Oh, fuck.
It got mad. Uh-huh. It started breathing fire and attacking back.
Sure.
And then, like, either would fly away, and I'd have to go back to the save point to see what. And it was either, like, you know, kind of really blinking back and, like, you know.
Yeah, flickering.
Flickering, and I couldn't get on it, and then it was getting mad at me, and
that was it.
I lost it.
Wow.
And I was so mad, and I never went back to it again.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would get mad, too. Yeah.
Yeah, and, that was my... Yeah, and I don't know what the chances of that glitch happening to everybody, but it was like lightning. Sure, well, it was like walking out and into a storm, and I'm the one that get hit by lightning.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know.
Well, so the moral of the story is have more than one save.
And you know, the reason why I did, because I was just trying to, you know, clean up my memory, you know, and I didn't have to go through all the saves to figure out which one was which.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though it's dated, it's time stamped, and you can see the latest one that you saved, but I was stupid enough not to do that. And look where it got me.
You know what, Camacho?
What's up?
I think you need to concede that you've you need to concede that you've made a mistake. Excuse me. You only had one save.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest mistake of my life.
That's it.
Wow. Well, you're doing all right then.
Yeah, it's all right. All right. You know. Yeah. Those other games. You know, it's not like it scarred me, and you know, my kids will be paying for it later on, and their generation will be paying.
The only
for
reason
it.
I say concede is because I'm been toying with this idea for the show where we make assertions and we try to trump each other's assertions.
Okay.
With our own opinions. So I'm not asking you to be dishonest. I'm just asking you to be passionate about.
And, you know, of all people passionate about video games, I mean, you're talking about the Xbox guy.
A lot of different things. But,
yeah.
It reminds me of Point Counterpoint. Mm-hmm. But,
which is a good, you know.
Which was fun.
Yeah.
But Point Counterpoint is fun. And so, yeah, if I make an assertion, something like asking you what your favorite sci-fi movie was,
mm-hmm.
or even, what's the best sci-fi movie?
Yeah,
okay. And come at it with that from that perspective.
No, yeah. Favorite or best sci-fi, would it be level?
And the concede thing is like, if you listen to somebody's argument or somebody's mm-hmm. point,
okay.
and you're convinced, you get to, or I concede.
Right, yeah. it's like a tapping out.
Yeah. Because I remember on Point Counterpoint that we had I remember Camacho one time asserted that Matrix Revolutions
was
better than Matrix 1. Mm-hmm. That was your assertion at the time.
That was the second Matrix, yeah.
Yeah. You made and we had
I still stand by my...
We had a pretty classic Point Counterpoint about it.
Didn't you guys do one about Green Lantern, the Green Lantern movie also? No,
we did one of who the best Robin was, I believe.
We did a few of them. You probably had some impromptu ones also. So tonight or today, I want to ask you what you think the best sci-fi movie ever was that you've seen. Obviously, you can't like say.
Okay, that's weird because the first movie that I come to has only been described to me, and I've only seen 5 minutes.
What's
of
your
it.
Gut reaction? When I
yeah, this movie, the movie I'm about to say, is my gut reaction, and yet I have never actually seen it. But I believe that it is,
have
in theory, the best.
Of it?
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of it, and I'm like, I get it. It's called Primer. Have you ever seen Primer?
No.
Okay, it's a time travel movie, but it's like a... I don't know if you want... No, I'm going to butcher it if I try to explain it. I think it might be like... It's not found footage, but it's almost like mockumentary. That's what it is. It's like mockumentary style.
Okay.
But it's these guys who build a time machine in their garage.
Mockumentaries are like Spinal Tap.
Yeah, exactly. It's like they are filming themselves. It's maybe like a cross between mockumentary and found footage. Well, it's I say mock because it's not
found footage. Would be like Blair Witch Project.
Right. No, I understand. Yeah. I'm saying it's somehow like a cross between the two of them because it's all handheld.
Okay.
And one of the characters is always filming it, and they're pretending. You know, they're actors filming a documentary. Well, no, they're actors filming a mockumentary, pretending to be scientists filming a documentary.
Okay.
And they build a time machine, but there's all these, like, crazy causal loops that they get fucking... But it, like, supposedly does a very... It, like, takes time-traveling paradoxes more seriously than...
Like Doctor Who.
Sometimes you'll get your grandfather paradox in, like, an episode of Futurama. Or in Back to the Future, right? You know, I mean, you get that one. Yeah. They're almost cliche by now. What's the other one? The Bootstrap Paradox. That one is less done, but still is probably the second most widely done. That's the one where you go back in time and give the Beatles the sheet music or give Led Zeppelin the sheet music to Stairway to Heaven.
Okay.
And they're like, wow, okay, that we like this song. And then they publish it as their own. And then it becomes famous. And it's a causal loop in that everything remains the same. Stairway to Heaven is the number one hit, blah, blah, blah. It's overplayed in department stores everywhere, blah, blah, sure. blah. Right? But now the question is, who wrote Stairway to Heaven?
Right.
Right? Because sure. Because they didn't write it, I gave it to them, but I got it from them, so it's this loop. Primer just goes all the way with it. That's my understanding of this movie.
Okay.
But how can I defend a movie I haven't seen? And yet, any other movie that I think of will pale in comparison, by my estimation, by my criteria of judging movie, will not be as good a movie as Primer at least portends to be.
Okay.
But still, that's interesting because, you know, I mean, who does that? Nobody but you. Well, and you're able to, you know, pull it off just great in Shed Talk.
Thanks.
I thought about it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best fucking sci-fi movie
I bet you I know what you're going to say.
It jumps out at me is fucking Aliens.
I knew you. Oh, Alien. Okay, I thought no, you were Alien. Ones. But the second one. Aliens, one. Okay. Aliens,
yes, the second one. Okay. The one that James Cameron made.
Okay.
James Cameron is a brilliant movie maker. He's made a lot of classic sci-fi. But for whatever reason, Aliens stands out. I mm-hmm. think it might be because it's the ability to blend the horror and sci-fi and action and just blend it all together into like this one, you know, pretty epic sci-fi movie. It's kind of like I watch Aliens and I'm like, wow, this is what Aliens should have been. You know, it's almost the first like one should have been? Yeah. I mean, Aliens. Okay, I'll probably get hate mail, but Alien 1's great. Mm-hmm. But you know, Ridley Scott. It's a different kind of movie.
It's a different kind of movie.
Alien
yeah.
is the way it is because it's actually each it, it alien forebodes.
Okay, wait a second. Here. Yeah, well,
sorry. You know what I mean? It's supposed to keep you in the dark a little bit and still keep you scared and wondering and still, you know what I mean? So I mean it's its own movie,
mm-hmm.
but I can totally understand why Aliens is your favorite.
Mm-hmm. I think it has to do a lot with. It was like one of the first R-rated movies I ever saw as a kid.
Okay.
It was on Cinemax and HBO when I was traveling across Texas as a kid. So I'd be in those hotel rooms at HBO and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Aliens would come on. I'd be like, whoa. At first I was too scared to kind of watch it. And then I watched it. And then I was like a kid and I just ended up loving it.
It's probably because it had a lot of its action.
It had like a classic hero
storyline.
You have somebody that's been a victim that sort of becomes empowered and fights back. Somebody who's been oppressed in the past, obviously had fears about it, faces their fears, overcomes them. And anyway, so it has these classic hero storylines and it blends in with in this sci-fi environment being, you know, space travel, androids, lots of different ideas about different expressions of life.
Sure.
and it's just kind of a kick-ass movie. I mean, just to put it down, just to put it bluntly, just all the way around, it's entertaining. A couple James Cameron movies came to mind.
Well, Avatar. It's the best sci-fi. Avatar.
Oh, yeah, sure, Avatar
too, you know.
Avatar was a visceral experience too, though, in the theater.
Sure, like, because you got to see in 3D.
Yeah. It's definitely not as impactful when I watch it at home.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole 3D, I went a couple times and saw it.
Bet you saw it like a dozen times.
A dozen times. I probably saw it like 5 times.
Do you remember that time you got mad at me? At the store, you were bagging my groceries. I was at the check stand.
I got pissed?
Yeah, and this is what happened. Because Andrew was bagging, you know, he stopped to help me because I had a big order. So he stopped and he was helping me bag groceries. And I remember you asked me, you said, did you finally see Avatar? Because I was like the last person on Earth to see Avatar.
Yeah, it sucked.
I said, yeah. I remember, and this is what came out of my mouth. I said, oh, I saw Avatar. It was almost as entertaining as Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls.
Wow.
And you, like, don't you ever compare Avatar to Indiana Jones, and you walked away.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, that was my opinion. I wasn't ragging on the movie. I wasn't trying to be mean.
You weren't ragging on the movie.
I wasn't being mean about it. I wasn't being mean because he liked it. I believe it. Just didn't do anything.
It didn't do anything.
You compared it with Kingdom of Crystals and the Crystal Skull. That's not.
And I know, me and you will always argue. And me and you will always argue why, you know, I didn't like... Exactly, you know. And I'm not ragging on the movie.
It's okay. Now is the time. And exactly. You're supposed to rag on the movie. I'm
disrespecting your for the movie. I totally respect your opinion.
Okay.
I respect the fact and appreciate
that you don't have to respect my opinion, dog.
No, I do, because we're friends. You know, we're all friends and we can do that, okay? Just because we may not see eye to eye, or we might have
point. Differences about Avatar,
but it's fun differences. You know what I mean? I know that this will piss you off, but for me, Avatar was no different than a very elaborate Pocahontas and John Smith story. And there's only so many ways you can do it. Yeah. But I know that it goes. You argue that it goes deeper than that. You know, than just what I filtered Avatar to really be.
Yeah, right.
But that's why I didn't like. That's why I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think if I saw it every day for the rest of my life, I don't think my opinion would change. Or I may be able to see why behind the curtain why or the true meaning why people like it.
This is why people like Avatar. Anyway,
but you know where I'm getting at.
I hear you.
And that was my only reason, you know. But I know it's not it shouldn't be like the only foundation of the reason why I dislike it.
I just need to call into question the fact that you compared it with Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal
Skull. I did.
Hey, what the fuck? Come on. I'm going to question your judgment. Just like the one save thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to call your judgment into question.
Okay.
Yeah.
And by all means, I don't feel like you're putting me on the spot. You know, I stand behind my decision and why.
Okay.
But
it's not an apt comparison.
Right? No.
It's okay if you didn't like Avatar, but it's not okay for you to like lower it to that level.
No, and I'm not demeaning the movie at all.
That's not a proper comparison.
No, it's but at the same time, you can see why.
You've deflected this for long enough. What's your favorite sci-fi? What's the best sci-fi movie?
If you guys really it didn't take me. The minute like this came to mind, I knew right away.
Steve's touting ones he hasn't even seen.
It took me like half a millisecond. It took me a shorter time to come to come up with it than it did for me. It takes me longer to blink.
Okay.
Than it for me to answer this question.
All right. Well, let's hear about it.
Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, okay. All right.
Empire Strikes Back.
Fair enough. Okay.
I absolutely will always love Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
Empire Strikes Back will, kind of have a place in my heart. I'll never forget it. I'll never forget the way I left the movie theater when I saw it. I will never forget, how could this happen? How could anybody let this happen feeling after leaving the movie theater?
Damn.
And, and this is back in 82, so I was only, 8 years old when it came out.
Sure, yeah.
And,
So are you referring to, spoiler alert, the part when you find out about Vader being...
When
he lost his hand.
The fact that when Vader... It was revealed that Vader was his father wasn't the big shocker to me. I was kind of like, huh, that's pretty neat. That's how they're kind of... How they're making the circle of family even... smaller, okay? The 6 degrees of separation just became, fully complete, okay?
Okay.
But the fact that Han Solo, I felt that there wasn't going to be a resolution to, him being able to be defrosted after being put in carbonite. The fact that they really messed him up you know, during the, you know, during the interrogation slash torture. Yeah, Luke lost his hand. It's like, well, how can the hero, you know, operate with just one hand? Now he's handicapped. The Empire, I mean, really came back with a vengeance. They were pissed that, you know, the Rebel Alliance, you know, destroyed, you know, their main, you know, weapon. And they didn't give a rat's ass. They were out for blood, and they got it. And the fact that, you know, technically the bad guys won. And then that was my first time ever watching a movie that the good guys, like, they stayed down for the count.
Well,
kind of, you know what I mean? Nice
movie. But yeah. They lost.
But I wasn't thinking of the next movie. I was just like, you know, the feeling that I got, I was like, because, you know, for me, you know, when I played Star Wars, you know, in the schoolyard, I always picked Han Solo, you know, because I was the kid with the dark hair. And, you know, like, I didn't, you know, I you know, he was just a cool dude. You know what I mean? He, you know, he had a cool, you know, I wouldn't even call Chewbacca as a sidekick. You know, he had a cool friend. You know what I mean? He was kind of like the, I wouldn't call the underdog, but he was the guy with the bad attitude that came back to be good at the end of Star Wars. You know, like, he didn't turn his back on these group of people that he met along the adventure and, you know, decided at the end to really come back and help them. You know, remember where Vader was about to shoot down the X-Wing fighter?
Sure.
And the Millennium Falcon came out of nowhere and bam, hit Vader's, you know, ship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sent them off to wherever so, you know, Luke could be able to complete the mission.
Okay.
And so that being said, that totally, like, you know, that's what, you know, that's what really made me like Han Solo. I didn't like Han Solo until the end of that movie.
I see.
You know what I mean? I was like, wow, that guy's actually cool.
Huh.
Like, he came back to, like, you know.
Yeah, right, yeah. Because
he was like, see you later, dude. I got my money.
But he came back at the end of the first one, too.
That's true. That's what I was just talking about.
Oh, I thought we were talking about Empire Strikes
Back. No. We are talking about Empire Strikes Back. Okay. But the reason why, like I said, what got me about Empire Strikes Back is because Han Solo, he, like, got shipped off to this Jabba the Hutt guy.
Yeah.
And I'm getting back to why I liked Han Solo. Right. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I didn't really care about Luke Skywalker. I really didn't. You know? Yeah. And for me, you know, I mean, that was pretty cool that he had lightsaber, that he was learning the Force. But also, the fact that when he landed on Dagobah and he met this Yoda person, and it turned out that this little, you know, mischievous guy was Yoda the whole time and was teaching him the ways of the Force. And it actually opened up, you know, another level of the Force and how important it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, wow, I was actually able to, like, appreciate Luke Skywalker as a character and what the Force has to offer, not just between, you know, Obi-Wan, Darth Vader, and now Luke Skywalker, you know what I mean? And so that, you know, Empire Strikes Back really opened up another appreciation of a whole, you know, of the characters that I could care less about in the first movie. And, you know, it gave me, you know, it just made me like everything about what I didn't like more. And yet, at the same time, the good guys lost. The good guys were done. And I was like, how could they, you know, like, you know, Indiana Jones always comes back. You know what I mean?
There was
Clint Eastwood always comes back.
Sure, sure.
How come this guy,
which Rocky did Rocky lose in?
The first one.
The first one, yeah. Okay. But you hadn't seen that yet. You were 8 years old.
I had not seen Rocky yet. Yeah. No. And so, you know, and when I finally saw Rocky, I was like, wow, that was cool.
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly.
But then Rocky 2 was already out on video, so I rented one and 2.
Yeah.
So I'm like, sure, that guy came, he made a comeback. Like, it was whatever. But, yeah, that's why Empire Strikes Back is, I think, the best sci-fi movie.
All right, well, okay. Granted, obviously, I'm not going to argue that Empire Strikes Back was a bad movie, but I will question. I'll question it as an easy choice. I'm gonna say that naming Empire Strikes Back as the best sci-fi movie is like saying, first of all, it's barely sci-fi. Star Wars is more of a fantasy movie that takes place in some kind of sci-fi environment.
And that's all.
Wow.
I've okay. never thought of Star Wars as like hardcore science.
It's sci-fi. Not hard sci-fi, no.
So like, no, when I hear the word sci-fi, I'm like, oh,
okay.
I mean, because, you definitely cannot compare.
Because with like Aliens.
Yeah.
Aliens is hardcore sci-fi because it really gets into the biology of what a life form is.
Terminator's a sci-fi movie. Would you consider Terminator a sci-fi movie?
Sure, yeah, because of the time travel.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Absolutely. Cyborg.
I would argue that Aliens was an action movie set in a sci-fi setting. Okay. Think of the first Aliens, the what are they called? What are the aliens actually called? Xenomorphs? What are they called again?
Yeah, whatever. They refer to them as, whatever. Like, yeah, okay. Xenomorphs.
Yeah.
Facehuggers.
They have a certain sort of... they capture people, and then they trap them and slowly suck nutrients out of them to nourish their young, which are growing nearby in these eggs.
No, people are like, they use people as incubators.
Oh, yes. That's right. The second, in Aliens, it seems like James Cameron completely abandons that, and the alien monsters just become killers. Killers who just fucking kill on sight. It's like Jaws.
And they expanded on the idea.
But they don't take people and incubate them, and
they go into those caves in the beginning, near the beginning of the, or in the middle of the movie, of the movie. They go into the caves, and they even have that one hatch in front of them, and they find all the old colonists that have been taken to the hive.
To be used
as hosts to hatch.
But when the aliens are like assaulting their base or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And the aliens are picking them off one by one as they're spreading out and doing the whole fucking, all right, you go this way, we'll go pair up, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Right? And they start picking them off one by one. They just kill the motherfuckers. At that point, for the bulk of the movie, it's just them versus land sharks. Right. Just Jaws with legs.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Game over, man.
So, I mean, I take issue with your claim that they really explored the biology of these things. I think they explored that more in the first one and possibly Prometheus, but not so much in James Cameron's movie, which was a great movie. But let me just sum up what I'm saying. If you're going to claim that Star Wars was fantasy in a sci-fi setting, I'm calling the question. Okay. I'm just asking questions. If you're gonna say the fucking Star Wars or Empire or whatever is fantasy in a sci-fi setting, I'm saying Aliens isn't just an action movie in a sci-fi setting.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, I didn't think about Star Wars. I mean, that's a good point. Star Wars being a fantasy set in a...
I mean, it's got its wizard characters.
It's
also a Western set. I mean, it's got also got those, like, it was meant to be like this space Western.
Look at Han Solo right there. I mean, he's almost like Cary Grant, you know, in the black vest and, you know, comes to try to save the day.
It borrows from a lot of genres, but saying Star Wars isn't sci-fi is like saying...
it's like a fantasy movie, but this is different...
Harry Met Sally isn't a romantic comedy.
It's not a... you're right. Yeah, it's like saying...
No!
Because it's the quintessential. It might be the top grossing sci-fi franchise of all time. I mean... To say that it's not sci-fi.
Now, don't get me wrong. When you compare,
saying banana isn't a fruit.
It's like saying avocado isn't a fruit.
Sure.
Or even the tomato is not a fruit. Right. I mean, it grows above ground, right?
But most people want to consider an avocado.
That's true, but it technically is, and so is. Wait.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's
Star Wars. So when you take when you compare Star Wars to Star Trek, Star Trek definitely is sci-fi.
Yes, absolutely. And
there's a big difference between the two, correct?
Yeah, you can't deny that there's a spectrum of from hard sci-fi to soft sci-fi.
Correct.
The hardest sci-fi possibly being something like what I described Primer to be, which is just technical. Hard, fucking technical,
scientific.
No fluff, scientific, exactly. And philosophical and just fucking metaphysical and whatever. Yeah, and then Star Wars may very well be at the opposite end of I nerded out on warp drive and shit like that when I was a teenager. I bought the Star Trek technical manual, the Enterprise technical manual. I want to know how that shit worked. If people are nerding out on the inner workings of lightsabers, yes, but it's my opinion that if you're nerding out on the inner workings of lightsabers, you're tripping out about the wrong stuff.
Exactly.
It's not the same as tripping out of warp drive.
No, you're right. Because, Star
Trek is way more techie.
Yeah. when it comes to lightsabers, I'm like, where are you going to find these crystals, first of
all? Yeah, I mean, I'm not as interested in that part of it. It was never meant to be that kind of sci-fi.
Correct.
But of course, fans get a hold of it and fucking...
And that's cool that you just said that, you know, Star Wars is a fantasy set in a sci-fi universe.
Well, because it doesn't...
Or sci-fi...
Setting, that's really cool, one of the things, because now you just gave me a better appreciation for the movie.
One of the things I appreciate about sci-fi is that it's a plausible world that's based in our science still.
Okay, yeah.
So when I watch like Aliens and you see people having to go into like hibernation through space travel and like all these other extremes, and you know. And they definitely have a more realistic take on how space actually functions. Yeah,
one,
and all I'm saying is that Star Wars is like a fantasy movie, like a fantasy setting.
Yeah.
There's no hard science to it. They're not playing with actual physics.
Sure.
Right.
And like saying, oh yeah, this is, you know.
Exactly.
They're making like a wild fantasy claim.
Okay.
That these different ships would function like how they do. And they can go at warp drive and they can do like whatever light the hell they speed. Want. That's why it's like fantasy to me.
Okay.
Like, it's like total fantasy. I'm like, oh cool. Like, it's cool.
Now one...
But I for some reason I have a hard time calling it sci-fi.
Okay. Now...
More than like maybe like... It's just like... It's like a less complex Lord of the Rings.
I think
space.
The only thing not sprinkled with fantasy, like, you know, like the lightsabers and even like the use force. Of the Force, exactly.
Oh, yeah,
but
it's magic. That's magic.
One thing, if you look back at, you know, when Luke is on Dagobah and Yoda is explaining what the Force is.
Mm-hmm.
Not how it really works, but
what it is. Right, yeah.
If you look at it and then you compare it to, like, Buddha, that's like, wow,
true.
Dude. That's, you know, that's kind of brings us somewhat of a semi, you know, religion or a belief behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I'm not saying there's no...
There's
a lot of theology to Star Wars. More theology than there is science.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe so, yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, no doubt
you know,
about
I have
that,
to
actually.
Say, though...
No doubt about that.
Even though Aliens wasn't, you know, it's your pick, not mine. But one thing that I have to say that I did appreciate about Alien or Aliens is the character Ripley. When you were just saying that they've taken, you know, like our science and they're able to, you know, mold it, you know, our up-to-date science and make it work for a futuristic sci-fi movie.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite... notions or, you know, things that they added to or put in or they stated in the Alien universe is the character Ripley.
Mm-hmm.
That I remember, I don't know if it was an Alien or Aliens that she disclosed that her daughter is old because of how many times gone into...
Yeah.
Hibernation prolongs your aging.
Yeah, she was lost.
And I thought that was really flippin' cool how they incorporated that because you don't think about things like that.
Sure.
And I thought that was, you know, something really...
You do now in a post-interstellar world.
Yes.
But not before that, you know.
No, definitely not.
Or fucking suspended animation wasn't all that...
Exactly.
...commonly known.
Nope.
But, like I was saying... And this is the best science
five. let me pose this question to you guys.
Sure.
Because this might give it some teeth. It makes it more objective and less like, you know, we like our movies for nostalgic reasons, blah, blah, blah. Now, you know, humanity, hypothetical situation, humanity is on its way out and we are going to send, or it doesn't have to be something like that. The next big probe, fucking Voyager 19, whatever the fuck, is about to go out in space and take a record of humanity with it. And only one sci-fi movie is allowed to be put on its databanks as a representation of the genre.
Okay.
It's got to be... Now, what one sci-fi movie, whether you liked it or not, deserves to be the one and only sci-fi movie that speaks for the entire genre?
I would have to say 2001 Space Odyssey.
That's mine, too.
I don't know
why.
Yeah,
if you wanted to freak the aliens out.
Well... If you wanted it to be representative of both quality and content.
I would say the
I don't know if that would be the movie I would choose to make first contact with another race with.
Okay. I understand this. Okay. That's more practical, and okay. I understand this is a calling card to aliens.
I'm not questioning. I think that 2001 is an amazing movie. I'm just questioning.
Okay. You're right. Okay, let's change it then.
Back my answer then?
Sure.
Because, you're right. Because, you know, thinking about...
But you're right.
I don't want some, first contact with... You know, that's like making a first impression on, like, your girlfriend's dad that you met for the first time.
Okay, you're right. That loads the question then. You're absolutely right to take that into consideration, but let's take that out. Let's just say we're going to bury a time capsule in the Earth as a record of humanity.
Okay.
Because it's the last generation of humans, nuclear holocaust, whatever the fuck. And this is just going to be the last, but there's only room for one sci-fi movie to represent the genre.
Okay.
What would deserve that title?
Would it have to be sci-fi?
Well, you can do one for any genre, but we're just talking about which one represents sci-fi.
Wow. You know, there's a sci-fi movie that I think is underrated. I don't know if any of you have seen it. It's been on Netflix for a while. Mm-hmm. I first ran into this movie when I rented it at Spotlight Video, probably like 12 years ago, maybe like something like even like,
okay.
maybe even, t- I can even safely say 10 years ago. Okay, mm-hmm. 10 years ago. Let's say even 10 years ago. And it's called Equilibrium.
Oh, with Christian Bale.
That's the one you choose.
Yes.
Equilibrium.
In a time capsule.
It's an entertaining movie.
It's cool.
But it's not the one I put in a time capsule.
Why not?
Because I could name so many other sci-fi movies that you've put in there before.
If it's going to be what would make for a good representation of a genre? First of all, it would have to be something widely fucking known and recognized. Something you can point at.
Well,
and be
the reason why I say not because it has Christian Bale in it. He's not my favorite character, Batman or anything. The reason why I actually liked the movie was because have you guys seen the movie at all?
Of course.
I've only seen bits and pieces.
Okay, I mean, all it is basically, you know, Big Brother having control over. Mm-hmm. That's like the corporations having control over us, the media, 1%. The consumer, blah 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 blah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Take your pill every day so that you can, you know, submit and, you know, obey and blah 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 blah.
Right.
And it's, I don't know, I mean, it has like up to date, you know, themes to it. It's it's extreme.
Okay.
But it's the sci-fi, you know, it's in that sci-fi universe where, you know, like if you step out of line, you become noticed, you're going to be hacked.
Maybe what you're saying is it just happens to be it's this nexus of all the most important sci-fi tropes.
Yeah.
The political commentary, which is usually there, it's usually meant to be a vehicle for that.
Yeah.
So that's there. But I mean, are there, if we want to say that it's a hodgepodge of just all the quintessential sci-fi tropes, are there robots?
There are not robots. It's all
Is there space travel?
No.
Is there any time travel?
Nope.
What is it, just guns? Are there fucking lasers at least?
No, you know why? Because calling Equilibrium a representation of the sci-fi genre that's going to be put in a little pod, a time pod, is... There might be some people that might not even realize it's sci-fi because it's like they're watching Hunger Games or something.
Yeah.
You might as well put Hunger Games on
there. I didn't even think about it. Now, what would you consider Hunger Games a fantasy? Would it be concerned?
Well, it's
I only saw the first movie, it didn't do anything for me.
There's no magic or anything. It's sci-fi.
That's what I'm talking about. Just because somebody called it sci-fi doesn't mean
the reason
it's
why it's called... Right, okay, the reason why it's classified under the sci-fi genre is because it takes place in a dystopian future. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And okay.
But so that's all that counts. We're not saying it's good. That's just, that's the bare minimum for qualifying as sci-fi.
Sure.
But if you have it, you qualify.
Okay. I'm not saying it doesn't qualify.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about reason what movie would I put in a time capsule.
Sure. Yeah, right, exactly.
Okay.
And if they don't shoot lasers, they shoot bullets instead, then I'm sorry. I mean, how sci-fi is it?
Sure. I mean, but then
all it has is just exists in a dystopian future, then it's just a weak link to the.
But then when you compare the Jetsons, you know, the Jetsons were set like in the, you know, whatever. God, let's say they even thought it was the year 2000. Yeah. We're not flying in cars.
Yeah,
not,
it doesn't have to be an accurate depiction.
Our cars aren't folding into our briefcase, and we don't have robots as maids. Well, I don't know. Maybe we some have robots as maids. But you know what I mean.
Yeah. No, I understand. But it doesn't have to be an accurate.
No.
We're not judging it on how accurate of a prediction it
was. Of course.
Right? I mean.
Okay.
What's up?
I debated this one between Aliens earlier.
Okay.
But I think this would go good in the time capsule. Blade Runner. I think Blade Runner is a great representation of the sci-fi genre from our era. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think that it incorporates... Sure, we've got the dystopian future again.
Yeah. What about the
androids? There's nothing wrong with that.
No, it definitely has probably some of the best androids ever depicted.
Yeah.
What would the androids represent?
What do you mean represent?
You know,
Like, in a political commentary?
It's not necessarily a direct allegory that you're pulling out of it. It more, like, really makes you think, like, it makes you, it uses these ideas to question what life is.
Okay.
And it really gets into what it means to be a human.
Okay.
What it means to have a consciousness.
Okay.
Because the movie's constantly playing with this idea that, hey, maybe these androids are alive too,
mm-hmm.
and their consciousnesses are just because they were created by what defines a consciousness, like, mm-hmm. what,
okay,
because they live in a world where there's all these laws that are created aimed towards regulating androids and mm-hmm. what it meant, you know, basically limiting them. And you have obviously this group of them that's like runaways, it's like a pushback.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the main character, Harrison Ford, Decker. He's basically works for the system that underpins, or that basically enforces this whole system of criminal justice,
mm-hmm.
so to say. Pretty much, certainly. Okay. And it's become obvious in the movie that the androids, you know, Rutger Hauer's character, they've reached a point of consciousness where they're self-aware,
mm-hmm.
and they're just as capable of having thoughts as humans are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's just a fascinating movie, and it opened up the whole cyberpunk
genre. Yeah, definitely.
It took a lot of really cool sci-fi ideas and incorporated them.
And there was even some anime that would, you know, kind of branched, you know, ideas from it.
I think it may have. I think it, like it may be credited with the first computer-generated graphics in a motion picture, because there's maps displayed on screens that are like 3D and they turn around and for the time.
Oh yeah, like even when you watch the cleaned up Blu-ray version, uh-huh. like it's still amazing looking. I mean, it really holds. The sets really hold up still. But yeah, I don't know. To me, that's the that's what I put in a time capsule.
It's cool. If we were doing books, then I think I would sooner add. That was Do Androids Dream of?
Right? Yes.
Sheep?
Yeah.
Whatever. All right. If I was doing,
but it definitely has the
uh-huh.
William Gibson Neuromancer uh-huh. feel.
I see. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I don't think the book had that noir-esque, that film noir-esque sort of. Well, how can anything but a movie have that feel to it?
Right,
but.
Right.
I think maybe as a story, it's such a quintessential story. If we were talking sci-fi books, that would be a candidate of mine to enter. But if we're talking sci-fi movies, I do fall back on 2001. I think it's the one movie that at least every space movie since then has given some sort of nod to, or has tried to, maybe not mimic, but live up to. Maybe not as overtly as Interstellar with the crazy black hole scene.
Yeah.
Right? Being an analog.
Interstellar is a great movie.
It's a great movie. Yeah. It could have done without, what's her name, Hathaway's speech about love and the sappy stuff. I think it was 75% a good movie.
Yeah.
But I think 2001 is so quintessential, and it's had such an influence on future sci-fi filmmakers ever since, that it just, you can't, I see it as the tip of the pyramid, and even if movies like Blade Runner, what else is like a really just fucking quintessential, maybe Logan's Run or some old school, something classic, right? All these classic movies, they all kind of like approach it, but don't. If I wasn't going to pick that, then my second pick might be Forbidden Planet.
Wow.
You know Forbidden Planet?
It came Leslie along Nielsen, the same...
1950s?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It was black and white, yeah. But it was a... you wouldn't have Star Trek. You wouldn't have a crew of people traveling to another planet and having this militaristic, but not really military,
diplomatic.
Like a, yeah, but a military sort of diplomacy, yeah. Not of nobody's carrying. I mean, they got firearms if they needed it and stuff. I mean, that was set to be
protection.
Self defense, right? Yes. So talk about influence on Gene Roddenberry and future, sci-fi TV and movie makers and stuff. But it's not well known enough. That's why I still think that 2001 hits all the marks.
Sure. But, when you look at, even like the popular sci-fis or something that's really just, has a fan following from it.
Right.
It, basically its director or its writer, its producer was influenced.
Yeah.
With something that they saw when they were kids.
Right.
Teenagers.
Oh, yeah.
At a Saturday afternoon matinee and at a movie sometime like, 40, 30 years prior to them actually being behind the camera or the pencil.
And you gotta figure that you could probably make a documentary interviewing all these prevalent sci-fi filmmakers.
Sure.
And, you can just make a documentary based only on their answer to the question, tell us about the first time you saw 2001. Oh, the first time I saw 2000, they could tell it to you like it was, where were you when Kennedy was shot or something like that, you know what I mean? That's what kind of influence I think it has had on those filmmakers.
Okay, that's true. That's a good point.
I might concede to 2001 being put in the time capsule over Blade Runner.
Yeah,
because Blade Runner is kind of niche too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's kind of like I like shit like that. You know what I mean?
Oh sure,
like,
yeah.
It's kind of dark,
right?
But at the same time, at the end, kind of has there's hope.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's found a way out of the system, and he's in love with an android, sort of.
Sure.
Thing. Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, no, it's he made a living. This character that made a living from capturing basically runaway androids to
has emancipated himself
and has fallen in love with an artificial person. Right. Yeah, it's really interesting.
If 2001 is Superman, then Blade Runner is Batman. And in tone and stuff, I would. I guess I'm that way too. I gravitate more towards a Blade Runner kind of sci-fi, I guess, than a 2001. But that notwithstanding,
but 2001 is so classic and
Archetypal. Iconic
and archetypal.
Sure.
Yeah. And anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I concede.
All right.
That's good. I'll never concede. But, I think that's probably about as much time as we have for this time. This shed time.
Yeah.
Right on.
That's what I'm trying to say. I'm sure there's more questions to come.
There is.
More positions to
and
be
if
held.
And if any of our listeners want to chime in,
suggestions.
Yeah, they know where to email. Yeah, they know how to Twitter, right?
Yeah.
Dude, we're on Twitter, right? You can find me at Brian Camacho, all lowercase, one word. Where can they find you?
I have to look.
You could find me at ShedTalk707.
Yeah, and that being said, you can address it to any three of us on the Shed Talk Twitter handle. So
yes. But yeah, got anything else for us, Steve?
Me, no.
No?
Come back to me.
Okay.
As for me, nope. But you know where to get kamached.
Oh, shit. Right here in the shed. Until next time.
Smack fuckers out of here. Smack fire to fucking ass. What the fuck you think this is, man? This ain't even enough blood right here. This ain't even enough. We gonna shoot right over there. And yo, them niggas got the big frame over there. This is shit. So just walk up, burn up the tropical, kid.
everybody. Don't claim it like I got a flower pot like that, Jay. On the real, man.
This money fast, son. I know how we gotta do this. Lay on the crime scene, sipping fine wines, pulling nines on UFOs, taking they fly close, they eyes closed. We getting loot, no doubt, check the word amount. Unheard about, guns go off and now we're murder out. I'm out, my raps play the part like a get smart. Secret agent and amazing, styles blazing. Johnny blazing, Tony Stark's in the dazing. And rhyming, my nigga Luke rhyming with Robert F. We like meth to go and fuck with noodles. Having them pools on the lockdown, buying me armor reticent, chewable, smacking pharmaceutical. Rap niggas on dust and wolves. Yo, I told you, some kill robbed and fold. The goals untold, fuck it, it beats below. So scroll, marvelous soul, controller of the globe, glow. Goddamn, I got it so. And yo, what up, Bob? Pop the suitcase high, and we can talk. You can walk out the fucking building and get caught. Save it, fully inflatable, rap relatable, drug relatable. Niggas here to play with you. $100 Rockwellers for the spot sellers. Guns and Glocks for them niggas who got rocks. Off top, jail niggas getting mad bigger. And yo, mail a guy about 100 pictures. Work the mama, this rap wanderama team got drama. Comma, blood smoke, realized marijuana. Chef Marizana, boats across the Barrazana. Immaculate, bust off my gun so accurate. They getting cream in the cuisine in Queens. I told you, money skated with 90 beans and two rings.
Crazy fact, and they do this shit.
Sniff hand soap, and they fuck, not even step on my shirt.
Who's the knucklehead, wanting respect? Top his fingers in the drug game, money well known. Lead singer, humdinger, flash, here's the aftermath. Here's this photograph, run up in his lap. Take off the mask, Chaz, and think fast. Don't laugh, bag the cash, grab the hash. Don't forget his stash, grab the tin gas and place it in his face fast and full blast. Then skate to the next gate, further state. I heard they got crazy weight bagged up by the cakes and grace like disco breaks. No, look out for Jake's. Give it all it takes, let's burn the place before we motivate. Yo, Blake, nigga, don't fake. Rape his mate if the bitch scream. For God's sake, grab the gray tape. It's by the plate with the blow crushed up with the flakes. Killer snakes, four bodies, fam floating in lakes. Drug related paper talking about the kids who didn't make it. Hits without a trace. 17 of bricks, E-Ray and Ghostface. Congratulations, chef, let's celebrate and sniff it. Hey.
The rap's bombers on, rap bombers on, popcorn, put it on, seal it on. With silicone, spark it on, you're talking on. This rap phenomenon to correspond to the arms, hit me on the hip and horns, rap chaperone, scars, tones, bar tone, war tones, roar tones, blowing out the jawbones. What your rap's fraudulent, plug in these rap ordinances, reinforced with suspense. Be on your rap, score defense. These microphone professional, sensational, fully operational. I got niggas here to play with you. You know what's these, you know my whole program. Brothers from the lowlands, all we want is the G's, guns and grams. Living fat like the Hopper, mafia, sipping, eating pastas. Laying in the house, telling the C's about the sagas. Before we got dramatic, and those got sporadic. We grabbed Nola tablets, and quick guarded the Abbots. Slugs hit the belly, punch holes into the belly. Suckers try to knock me out the box like Skelly. I smoke the weed trees, I drop top to the breeze. Honey dip, spending G's on nails and hair weave. The crime boss taking the loss, excessive force. We can play the A train, back up the iron horse.
Well, yo, man, you know what I'm saying? Fuck it, man. Yeah.